I'm Paul Kengor. Check out my latest book, Takedown, on the ideological sabotage of family and marriage.
Radio for Catholic and other Christians. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
Hudson, welcome to Church and Culture. This show is devoted to exploring the interaction between our faith and our culture. Each week, I will talk with expert guests on topics ranging from literature, art, and music to politics, liturgy, spirituality, and education. Thank you for joining us. Guest today that you're really going to enjoy. She joins us from Copenhagen in Denmark. Her name is Iben Tranholm. Iben Tranholm is in Denmark, one of those widely read columnists and, I should say, guests on television interviews on issues regarding political and social events, and especially religion and the impact of religion or the lack of religion on European culture, including Russia, which we'll talk about in a moment. I should say before I ask her to speak is that she's the former editor and radio host at the Danish Broadcasting Corporation of a religious news program. If you know anything about Scandinavia and Denmark in particular, you'll realize that having a religious news program there on the Danish Broadcasting Corporation network is quite a coup. We're going to talk about her travels and around the world, especially in Russia. Welcome to Church and Culture, Iben.
Thank you so much for having me.
I must say I've been reading a lot about you on the Internet, your numerous writings, which are extremely interesting and, to me, particularly interested because I've traveled to Moscow several times on religious trips. And I'm particularly interested in your reporting that Russia is experiencing a kind of Christian revival. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, it's very interesting that you have been to Moscow, because many people have not been to Moscow after communism collapsed and have no understanding that Russia is absolutely not the old evil empire, as President Reagan used to say. It's not that anymore. It's a total change that has happened. And I think many media today, the mainstream media, the way they demonize Russia and President Putin, it's completely false. Because if you go to Russia, and I know a few people who went to Russia, and they say, wow, you're right. I mean, we had no idea that people were so friendly in Russia, and that it's such an open society, and it's very modern. And on top of that, it's a Christian society. The first time I was there, I was really, really struck, because everywhere in the public square, you would find icons. I mean, there is a huge department store on the Red Square called Boom, which is, you know, you can find all the Western luxury brands and all the designers' clubs, shops. And above every entrance, you have an icon of Christ the Pantocrator or the Holy Mother of God. So before you go and buy your Prada shoes, you would look at Christ and you could say a prayer. I mean, you don't find that in the West. It's completely different. And, you know,
well,
I grew up in Scandinavia.
As you know, Iben, the Catholic universities took down their crosses back in the late 60s and 70s.
Yes, absolutely. And now everything, I mean, all the Christian symbols are coming back to the public square in Russia. Also at the Kremlin, above the entrance, one of the entrances to Kremlin, they have the big icon of St. George with the dragon, which is actually the symbol of Moscow. So it's everywhere you see. I saw young people prostrating themselves, you know, making the sign of the cross and bowing down just in front of the church, just passing by a church. They didn't even enter the church.
Really?
Just to show respect. And that was on my first trip to Moscow. It's almost 3 years ago. And, you know, I came from Scandinavia, and I grew up during the Cold War here in Scandinavia, where Russia was quite close to us, and we were always extremely frightened because people were talking about a Russian invasion. There were even people within Denmark that was, you know, working for a Russian or a communist revolution here. So, and we knew that the Christians were deported to the gulags and things like that. So, you know, for me, I mean, it was just, you know, something that was very far away and was very frightening, and something you really have to be very fearful of. And suddenly I was standing there at the Red Square. And for the first time in my life, I felt I was in a culture where Christianity was really accepted. Because even though, I mean, I live in the West and we have a lot of churches and Christianity is our common belief or our cultural fundament. Well, there has been really, ever since I was born, this constant attack on Christian values in the schools, at the universities, everywhere. You know, it was disregarded, and it was, you know, people tried to destroy the Christian fundament. And suddenly, I was in Moscow, and I could see that it was like a Christian culture in a complete different way than here, because everybody thought it was right to be Christian, or everybody thinks it's right to be Christian. I mean, you won't get mocked, you won't get socially marginalized, people won't tell you that you're less intelligent or you're out of your mind because you believe in God. Everybody thinks that this is right. Even though, I mean, there are many Russians who are not practicing their faith yet because they grew up with atheism, so they need to learn how to go to church. But still, everybody agrees that the Orthodox Christian values is what the Russian society should be built on. And, you know, it's hard to find that kind of attitude in the West anymore, because most people would say, well, I don't really think there is a God. And if there is a God, he should absolutely have no influence on politics and how we organize our society. And we don't want crosses or icons in the public square. So it's two different worlds. So
Eben, I want to pause there, because I can give our audience a chance to kind of digest what you've said. I've had a few hours to digest it after reading it, and I am delighted you're here on the show. Eben Tranholm, which when it's written down has an H after the T and before the R, so if you go on the Internet, I hope you will, to find Eben's work. It's I-B-E-N Tranholm, if you're looking for her writings and her interviews. I might just say that I was there for a couple of times. I helped to close an abortion clinic and reopen it as a maternity hospital. And in doing this, this would have been in about 2000, 2001, I met with the, not the patriarch, but the second in command of the Russian Orthodox Church. Had a long meeting with him. We wanted their support for this maternity hospital, and they gave us our complete support as long as it did not have any symbols of Roman Catholicism on it. So what is the relationship between, you know, the small Roman Catholic community, say, in a place like Kiev, and this revival of Russian Orthodoxy?
Well, it's true that there is a problem with the schism between the churches, because after 75 years of atheism, Orthodoxy wanted to recover and not be influenced by the Roman Catholic Church or any other Christian societies, like evangelicals, Protestants. They wanted to be in peace and to recover their own Orthodox roots. That's part of it. But
who can blame them for that?
No, but there is a kind of, there is this schism that happened almost, I mean, 1,000 years ago between the Eastern Church and the Western Church. And it is still, it is still there. And I think that some Orthodox, they consider Catholics to be heretics. I mean, there are some very conservative Orthodox that would say, well, we cannot have anything to do with the Roman Catholics because they have the Pope, and we disagree that there should be a Pope. There was, you know, several patriarchs, but not one Pope which is above the others. And there are some theological problems as well with the filioque question. So they are still very strict, and they are things that the Western society has become so secular, so they don't want any influence.
But the Pope and the Patriarch met last year in Cuba.
Exactly, exactly. That was in 2000 that you had this message from them. But a lot of things have happened since then, because Patriarch Kirill, he really wants to embrace, I think, the Roman Catholic Church, and like to try to make some kind of alliance with the Roman Catholic Church, because they see what's happening in the West, and they say, we have been there for 75 years, so we know what it's like, because they see that the spirit of communism did not die when communism collapsed in the Soviet Union.
Ibn, I have to tell you something. Patriarch Kirill, who became patriarch in 2009, has the exact same birthday I do.
Oh, congratulations.
Except he's 3 years old. Except he's 3 years old. But he's brought, as you, he's much more open to working with Roman Catholics than the previous patriarchs.
Absolutely. Because he thinks that we need to join forces against the persecutions of Christians, which was the meeting with Pope Francis was all about. And he sees that that the Christian faith is really under a lot of pressure in this militant secularism we have here in the West. It also goes for the United States. So I think he knows that we need some kind of help from them. He said, we are here to help you because we have been through that ourselves, so we know how to handle it. We have a lot of experience with these godless rulers who want to destroy the church. We know what it's like because we've been there for so long. So I think actually he sees that it would be a good idea to make the Roman Catholic Church and the Russian Orthodox Church allies. And I think now, I mean, the political climate is so poisoned. I mean, the tensions are running so high. Look what happened with the election and Trump that was being accused of being a Russian agent and all this. I mean, the new political tool is just to link your opponent to Russia. Then you have undermined him. So I think we have one common ground with the Russians, and that's very important, and that's Christianity. Because right now, Russia is becoming a Christian superpower, you could say. So Christians in the West, they should see this, or at least the Russian people who are Christians as their allies against those godless rulers we have in the West and other places in the world that wants to destroy everything that has to do with Christianity, because there is a global persecution of Christians, and that it's very serious. It has never in the church history been as massive and as bad as it is now.
Ibn, back in 2014, Pat Buchanan wrote an article entitled Vladimir Putin Christian Crusader ? And he goes through and makes the point you're making, is that this would have been 3 years ago now, that there are so many signs coming out of Russia, and particularly from Putin, that they have rejected, you know, homosexual marriage, they have rejected the LGBT movement. But you actually were, I should say, alerted to this, and I hate to say the word on the radio, by the so-called P-word protest in Moscow. Now, when did that happen, and why did that mean so much to you?
Yeah, that was what caught my attention to that Russia was becoming a Christian nation.
What year was that?
I think it must have been in 2011 or something like that.
And that maybe led to your first trip to Moscow?
Yes, exactly. No, not immediately, but it was the Pussy Riot case that opened the door to Russia for me, because I understood that because Russia, I mean, the reason why the Pussy Riot was put on trial and they were jailed was not because they criticized Putin. That's very important, because they had done that before on the Red Square with some demonstrations or some happenings. But it was because they went into a church and they desecrated the church. And for Russians, that reminds them of the Bolsheviks, because they did the same. So they didn't want anything like that to happen again. And, you know, it was more than 90% of the Russians that agreed that nothing like that should happen in a church. So
they went into Cathedral of Christ the Savior.
Exactly, which was rebuilt after the collapse of communism, because Stalin blew it all up and there was a swimming pool. So it was rebuilt. So it was rebuilt again for private donation. That's it. That's very important. And I think it was finished around 2000. So they went in front of the iconostasis, which is the gate to the holy area, and they performed this punk performance, whatever it was. And they were, so it was really like a blasphemy. And the Russians won't tolerate that. So, and here in the West, everybody was clapping their hands and thought that the Pussy Riots had done something that was fantastic, because this was like, you know, celebrating freedom of speech. Because here in the West, if you go and you say something blasphemous, you are a hero, I mean, for freedom of speech. So I thought, wow, I said to myself, this is amazing. Those people in Russia, they refuse to compromise when it comes to Christian values. So that really caught my attention. And then I realized that, you know, I started to do some research on Putin, because already back in 2001, there was published a biography about him. It's called First Person, where he says something that is very remarkable. He says that Russia has to be just as concerned about its spiritual position as its geopolitical. And I thought, that was amazing. And then later on, he said that he wanted to protect Christians in the Middle East and, you know, everywhere in the world. He actually made a vow to the Russian Orthodox Church that he would protect Christians around the world from persecution. And then later on, in 2013, he was invited to a meeting, an annual meeting for journalists. It's close to Sochi. It's called the Valdai Forum. And he always gives a speech to those journalists. And then he said in 2013, he said that the West, he said Russia has chosen God and the West had chosen Satan. He said Satan. So it's very unusual nowadays to hear a president speaking in spiritual terms. So that's why I thought it was really interesting.
Except for Trump's inaugural speech.
Exactly, but yeah, but I mean, Trump is really, you know, very surprising. He also said today to his staff, I heard that, in the White House, that he said that with faith in God, we will get the job done. So I think God, actually Trump is bringing God back into the public square. He also insisted on saying Merry Christmas, you know. So I think actually Trump and Putin are somehow alike, that they are they're actually not afraid to talk about God. I think that's fantastic. That's really fantastic, because that has been so forbidden with the political class for years, for many years. You couldn't mention God at all. You know, I don't know whether President Putin is a personal Christian, but from what I hear from sources in monasteries and places like that in Russia, he is going to monasteries alone to pray. He goes to Mount Athos, you know, this this island in Greece where you only have
monks. Yes, it's very famous. Yes.
And he's very serious. And I have been speaking to some priests that are close to Putin. I said, so do you think he has personal faith? I said, well, we don't know. But whenever he's in church, he is praying seriously. And you hear from the vocabulary that he's using that the way he's talking about the faith and church is not political language. It's actually a believer's language. And I think that's very important.
When I talked to President George W. Bush about his first meeting with Putin, he told me that he thought Putin was a Christian.
Mm. But I think he is too. And I think that his faith is growing because he knows that he has he has a certain mission in a way, and look how he's demonized. I mean, it takes a lot of strength to be in his position and take so much hatred, so much critique from the West, and so many lies. So you need to strengthen yourself spiritually to be able to stand firm. He has been the target of so much demonization and so many lies.
Let's focus for a second on the question of the Crimea. Ibn, isn't it the case that the Crimea is considered by Vladimir Putin, you know, deeply united to Russia as a whole because it's the place where Vladimir the Great in 988 converted to Christianity and really made Russia into a Christian country?
Absolutely. And that is an angle in the whole conflict between Ukraine, the West, and Russia that is not being reported about in the Western media. And that is that the Russians are so... I mean, that Ukraine is such a hot spot because that's where they... I mean, this is the cradle of their Orthodox faith. That's where it all began. So it means that if it suddenly is going to be taken over by this atheistic, godless, secular culture, I mean, it would be horrible to the Russians. And the people that are fighting on the Russian side in eastern Ukraine, they're fighting to keep an Orthodox culture. And that's something that is completely neglected or ignored. Western journalists do not understand this spiritual aspect of the whole conflict.
I did not hear a single report that brought the religious dynamic of that conflict to the surface.
But it's all about that. It's all about that. And the reason why that the West hates Russia so much, I mean, not the West, but our political elite, which is, you know, trying also in the West to destroy Christianity.
Yes, that's absolutely right. Absolutely correct.
The reason why they hate Russia, it's a spiritual hate. It's not a political struggle. It's a spiritual warfare. Because they don't want the Christian values to regain power. That's what it's all about. Because they cannot control Russia. Because Russia won't surrender. It won't submit to those atheistic values, those same-sex values, same-sex marriage values, abortion, all these things that is now being promoted as, you know, good things in the West.
Just like they wouldn't give in to the Nazis and they wouldn't give in to Napoleon.
Exactly. And if they're going to start a war with Russia, they won't win it. They will never win a war with Russia. So they're going to destroy themselves. So that's why I think right now it's very important that Christians in the West understand that Russia is not our enemy. It's our spiritual ally. It's our Christian ally against this political elite that is anti-Christian. So, it's not about being a Russian or an American. It's about whether you want to keep a Christian world order or you want to give in to this anti-Christian global agenda. So that's what it's all about.
Ibn, I noticed that in 2013, Moscow hosted the World Council of the Families meeting.
Yeah, that's true.
So there are a number of Americans, not too many, writers, who are picking up on what you, I think, have taken the lead in broadcasting, that there's this whole entire spiritual dimension of the struggle between Russia and the media and political elites of the United States, the attempted demonization of Vladimir Putin, and that this is actually, like you say, they're potentially a great Christian ally for the United States.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Now, do they want to be the Christian ally of the United States, given that Roman Catholicism is so strong here?
I think they are changing their mind. I think they... the Russians don't want a war. It is not the Russians who is aggressive. They don't want a war. And, you know, I came to Russia as a Roman Catholic. Everybody knows that I'm a Roman Catholic. And they are very open to me. Sometimes, we have had some some, I wouldn't say discussions, but if, I mean, at first hand, if you are a guest in a country, you just accept that they might have a different opinion about things, and you don't try to, I mean, to convince them that they're wrong. I mean, you just respect them. I mean, this is the key thing to meet the Russians, just respect that they're Orthodox. And when they see that you are of goodwill and you are a good Christian, things start to change. And they are willing, I mean, they're willing to stretch out their hand to the Christian West, because the, I mean, the Russians, they do really have a big, what should I say, admiration for the old Christian Western world in many ways. What they don't like is this militant secularism, because it reminds them of the Soviet Union. So they don't like those values. So I think we could really, if the Christians of the West and the Christians of the East could, you know, be united against this very aggressive anti-Christian global agenda, I think we could really, really change the world.
Let's take a short break, Ibn. I'm talking with Ibn Tranholm, a journalist, a writer, I guess really now an activist, from Copenhagen, Denmark. We're going to talk more about Russia and about Muslim terrorism in Europe after this short message.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popchuk.
Every day, men are bombarded with messages that to be a real man, we have to buy this, do that, or act this way. Men, are you listening? You're already a man, and you're manly, because that's how God made you. Pope John Paul II's Theology of the Body reminds men that just by possessing a man's DNA, you are encoded with God's spiritual and physical gifts of masculinity. Yes, you can always work to become a better, a godlier, stronger, or gentler man, but no matter how badly you fail or how much you struggle, nobody can take your manliness away from you. Masculinity is a God-given gift planted deep within each man, and while it can always be developed, you don't have to earn it, and nothing you do can make you lose it. I'm Dr. Greg Popchuk, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
The Eastern Catholic Re-Evangelization Center, also known as ECRC, decided to host a board meeting at a restaurant with spouses. We took up a side room reserved for big parties. Father Andrew was one of the last to arrive, and within minutes he was rearranging the room. Some of us noticed that the actual setup was not conducive for conversation, but no one did anything about it. Someone said with a chuckle, "Oh, that's Father Andrew taking charge." And he says, "Yeah, and sometimes I'm controlling." I remarked, "I don't mind those who are controlling if what they're doing actually makes sense for everyone." Then I realized there's a big difference between taking control and being controlling. Father Andrew actually rearranged the tables that made sense for everyone. People who just take control don't necessarily think about everyone's best interest. So which one are you? Do you take control or are you merely controlling? And think about the one Jesus would want us to be. This has been a Christ Center communication message. I'm Vanessa Denha-Garmo, a communications evangelist.
I am back with Ibn Tranholm from Copenhagen, Denmark, journalist, writer, now I think fair to say activist. She's been going back and forth to Russia, specifically to Moscow, and talking about her Catholic faith, her Christian faith, with those in Russia who embrace her and embrace her as a Christian. And she's been reporting on the revival of Christianity, that would be Russian Orthodox version of Christianity, in Russia. Now, Ibn, are there any existing platforms or organizations that are working on what you have said is so important, this partnership, this coalition between the United States and Russia?
Not really. I mean, there are some small associations for intellectuals or, you know, people who are doing research and things like that. But there is, I mean, I think something that needs to be established, actually, because it has to come from the grassroots. People of goodwill Christians. I mean, I get more and more notes and messages from people from America and from, you know, all sorts of places in the world that say, you're right, Russia is not the enemy. And they agree with me that it's all about trying to, at least for the West, that the West is trying to make this war because they are not, they're not following Christian values themselves. So it's all about Christianity. So more and more people are getting aware that this is a spiritual conflict, it's a spiritual warfare, it's not a political struggle. So I think that it could be established, and it should be established, because that's the way we can avoid war. I mean, if we could understand, or if more and more people outside Russia could understand, at least the Christian Christian people could understand that the Russians are Christians, and we should actually unite, we would be much stronger. And I think there is a strong anti-Christian global agenda from those political elites that used to.
Oh, there is no question about that. I mean, I think that's been, as you point out in your writings on Muslim terrorism in France, for example, none of the then existing heads of either European nations or the United States, Obama, were even mentioning extreme Islamic terrorism or ISIS in relation to those all the deaths that occurred in the various bomb attacks in Paris and in I think in Marseille, and that poor priest who had his head practically cut off.
Exactly, exactly. And you know what? Here, our Secret Service in Denmark, they just released a report where they say that, I mean, that Russia is much more dangerous than radical Islam. It's crazy. It's crazy because people get, women are raped. We have a lot of violence. It's not Russians, but it's radical Muslims. It's not the Russians who's coming here and raping our women and you know, committing crimes. They're not doing any terror attacks, so it's completely crazy. And that's why I say the way you can see that this is a spiritual warfare is because it's completely irrational. And whenever the hatred is irrational, there is some kind of supernatural thing going on. Because from a political perspective, the hatred against Russia and the aggression against Russia is completely irrational. I mean, it has nothing to do with reality, but what is the real enemy is radical Islam. And I think, and that's what President Trump also said, that together with Russia, we could actually defeat ISIS. And they could defeat ISIS very quickly. And I think, I'm sorry to say this, but I really think that our secular leaders, at least here in Europe, they have made what I call an unholy alliance with radical Islam, because both of them want to destroy the Christian culture. So they hate Christianity so much, those secular leftist, progressive, social, what do you call it, all those Democrats, liberal Democrats. They hate Christianity so much that they're willing to join forces even with radical Islam. And that's something that people have not yet grasped. But this
I think you're exactly right. I think you said it very clearly and powerfully. There is a kind of de facto acceptance of the existence of ISIS if it allows the secular elites to remain in power.
And to destroy the Christian culture.
Yes,
because that's what they're doing.
Do you know how often conservative Christians, pro-life Christian in the United States are compared to Islamic extremists?
Yeah, I know.
Even though we don't cut anybody's heads off.
But that's again this demonization of everything that is Christian. So. When these people are demonizing Russia or conservative Christians, you can be sure it's part of their anti-Christian agenda. And people are not really aware of it because they still think it is a kind of political struggle. It's not. So the Christian people have to wake up a little bit. And also, many Christians are very fearful. They are afraid to speak out because they know that it could have consequences. At least here, I mean, if you're very outspoken conservative Christians like I am, it's hard for you to find a job.
Oh,
because
absolutely.
Nobody would employ a person like that. So we need to get over that. Because, I mean, we should not let these people win the war, and they will eventually make war with Russia, which could be a total disaster for the whole world.
Do you think that what we're seeing in France and to some extent in Germany and Hungary today is a sign of Europe waking up to what you're talking about?
I think it's going to be very crucial, the outcome of the election in France and in Germany and the Netherlands this year, because people are starting to wake up a little bit, also because they have seen what happened in the U.S. with the election of Trump. So people have started to get more hope, I think, in a way that they maybe could change here too, because people are fed up with political correctness. But many people are very, very afraid because of this political correctness, which is very, very hard, because if you say, you know, a wrong word, even your friends or your family could turn their back on you. I mean, I have been at so many dinner parties where when somebody said or gave their honest opinion, you know, the atmosphere was not very nice anymore. So
I have people over here losing lifelong friends. I have a friend who has been a lifelong friend with a painter who came and took her paintings out of my friend's home that she's had for 20 years, just took them back.
Mm-hmm. But I'm not surprised.
So I think, of course, you know, if you're a conservative, pro-life Christian of any type in the United States, you can forget getting jobs in many, many sectors of the business and media world, and, you know, particularly in Hollywood.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know what? This political elite, they have stolen what we call democracy, and they have made a new definition of it, because this is not democratic. So I really think now it is the responsibility of the church to take it back. I mean, the true democratic culture. I mean, it's only the church, because actually the founder of EU, Robert Schuman, he said, if democracy is not Christian, it won't last. It won't exist, he said. And I think that's true, because the
founder of the European Union said that?
He was a Catholic. He was a French foreign minister, and he founded the EU right after the Second World War to create peace between France and Germany. He said, democracy has to remain Christian, otherwise it won't exist, he said. And that's true, because you see that democracy can be just as totalitarian as any other ideology. And that's what we're seeing now, that some people claim that there are certain opinions that are not okay. And it's, you know, it is a tyranny that is going on now in the name of democracy. And Christians are the first victims. So there is this psychological persecution of Christians already happening in the West a lot. And we're not talking about it. We're not articulating it. We're just keeping silent. So I really think Christians need to wake up and say no, like Trump said, no.
Again, I want to remind our listeners, I'm talking to Ibn Tranholm from Scandinavia. And if you go on the Internet to look at her videos or interviews or her writing, put an R between the T-H and the A-N, Tranholm. I mean, no, I'm sorry. Put an H after the T between the T and the R. So her name on the Internet would be Tranholm, but we pronounce it Tranholm. How many people are there like you in, say, in Scandinavia, who are standing up and taking the risk of speaking out on behalf of Christianity, the need for closer ties with Russia, the need to get democracy connected back to its roots in the Christian faith?
Well, not many. I might be the only one. I don't know. You know, there are many people who write to me, and they support me, and they agree with me. But for some reason, I happen to be the voice about this. But I'm happy to do this because I think that it's needed. And my joy is to see so many people that are waking up and get back to me and say, yeah, you're right. Because I think what we are heading at, if somebody is not telling no, it looks very nasty because it looks like the Soviet Union. And I don't want the Christian culture to experience what the Russians experienced for 75 years. Because we're already, this talk about fake news and hate crime.
It's all nonsense.
It's all nonsense. It's just for those people to control the narrative.
Right.
And to undermine their opponents. So, it is a big irony that after so many years of, you know, relativism, now the only thing that matters is truth. And those people who taught the younger generation that there were no such thing as the truth, they are now exalting themselves as truth tellers and telling who's lying and who's saying the truth, or who's telling the truth. I mean, it is absurd. But
by the way, Evan, I don't know if you saw it, but just today the news broke that the very venerable Atlantic magazine in the United States had published an article about sonograms, saying that the fetal heartbeat was a myth. There was no fetal heartbeat. Can you believe that? Yes.
Yeah, but
they had to retract. They had to retract it, but they published it in the first place.
Mm. But it's a lie, you know. It's a lie, and that's why today you really need to have a very good sense of spiritual discernment to understand who's fooling you and who's telling you the truth. And unfortunately, because we were so influenced by relativism, many people have not practiced the skills of discernment. So you really need to be rooted in your Christian faith and have a very intimate, close relationship with God and read scriptures to get that kind of skill. Because there are so many lies right now, and you don't know who to trust. So you really, because God is the truth, and Christ said, truth will set you free. So truth really matters, and there are so many lies. And there are so many people who are telling that those people who are lying, they are telling the truth, and the reverse. So it's very confusing. So you really need to be grounded in God.
I want to ask you a personal question. What people, whether living or dead, writers, books, have had the most influence on your personal formation, your spiritual, philosophical formation?
To be honest with you, I think the mystics of the church. And one mystic particularly is actually a now living mystic, there has been some controversies with her and the church. So I know many people perhaps is not...
Who is it?
She's called Vassula Rudin, which is an Orthodox mystic. And she has received some messages from Christ called the Two Life in God messages. And for me, when I was when I decided to convert to the Catholic faith, it was because I read that. So I have to be honest and say, even though people
That's
think
okay.
that she might not...
We won't... Nobody,
not,
will hold it against,
offensive.
Nobody will hold it against
she was,
you.
I mean, she was being asked some questions by Cardinal Ratzinger when he was the prefect of Congregation of the Faith. And he was very pleased with her answers, but still the church holds a notification against her. Many mystics have gone through the same sort of investigation, and I know she met with Cardinal Ratzinger, and he was very content. He was very open to her.
Good. How long ago did you convert?
It was in 2003, and the reason why I actually started to get interested in Russia was because Christ already in 88, he told Vassula in a message that he would resurrect Russia as he resurrected Lazarus. And he said that before it happened. And he gave many prophecies on Russia. And he said that Russia would be the nation that would glorify him most in the end.
Are you familiar with the notion of the Third Rome?
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Do absolutely. You think the idea of the Third Rome being Moscow has some validity?
I don't know, but I think that we know, because this is the main message of Vasula Gudin's messages, is that Christ wants unity. Christ wants all the three denominations to unify. He wants that, because it is our division is a sin, and he's suffering because his body is in three parts. And that's why the church globally is so weakened. It's because of our division. So that is an internal church affair. It has nothing to do with politics. It's a spiritual thing. That we are still holding grudges against each other, and we are still in a kind of division, and we are not... I mean, how can we talk about love and reconciliation when we hate each other?
But wait a minute, Ibn. Wait a minute, Ibn. I don't know anyone who hates the Russian Orthodox Church. And I'm a Catholic. I don't know anybody who hates the Evangelical Protestant Church. I know of people who have criticisms and so forth, but it seems to me the hate is only among the top, only at the very among the sort of bureaucrats. I mean,
yeah,
where is the hate between these three branches of the faith?
Well, I mean, you can always find. I mean, here in Denmark, where I'm living, there are. I mean, it's probably the most anti-Catholic country in the world.
Really?
There is a lot of resentment. There is a lot of resentment against Catholics. Yes, there are. It's really difficult. When I converted, I thought that I would be completely finished because I know how Catholics are mocked and scolded here, and they're not seen as real Christians. Yeah, it is like that. It's a part of the culture, and so forth. So you can find this on many levels. But I think that our church leader, and that was why it was so fantastic to see the Pope and the Patriarch meeting in Cuba, because this is the way we should, I mean, progress. We should, of course, I'm not saying that everybody should be Orthodox or Roman Catholic or Evangelicals, but at least we should have an understanding that we stand united, and we should not be in this kind of schism. I mean, it's wrong, and I mean, we are, I mean, our belief is that reconciliation and peace between people and unity and love is fundamental. So we should live that ourselves. And, I mean, Christ said to many mystics, one of my other favorite mystics is a Swedish mystic from the 14th century called St. Bridget of Vadstena.
Oh, yes.
Which was founded by the St. Bridgetine sisters. And she actually received messages from Christ exactly like the Sula did. And it's actually the same voice. It is the same message. And he stressed to St. Bridget unity. She was also trying to promote unity between the Orthodox and the Catholics. So it's an old issue. So I think that this is really what Christ wants. He wants us to unite. And now we see this global persecutions of Christians. So maybe those calamities would bring us together, and so we have to unite to get stronger. Because, I mean, every military person knows that if you divide your enemy, he's weakened. So it means division always weakens. So as long as we don't stand united, we're weakened. And Christians should you know, pay attention to that.
Are you a fan, by any chance, of the Norwegian writer Sigrid Undset? She's one of my favorite writers.
Oh, yes, absolutely. She's really she's a fantastic writer.
Do you have
she
any...
She also converted to Catholicism.
Yes. And
you know that.
I think she's one of the great Catholic writers of all time. I think she's one of the great novelists of all time. And I edited a book on Undset some years ago because she was such so special to me. Are there any great Christian writers in Scandinavia now?
For the
who
moment?
Write novels and short stories or poetry? Are there any great
no.
writers?
No. I mean, there might be a few, but there is some small unknown poets, things like that, but nothing particular. I mean, in our epoch, there is no, or in our era, you don't have, you know, Christians that are great artists. Not anymore. It used to be like that. But I think that the art has become, at least here in this part of the world where I live, has become the promoter of darkness. I mean, if you see much modern art, it's not about what is beautiful, what is truthful,
what is good.
It's about, yeah, the good. It's more about trying to depict what is ugly and, I mean, full of darkness. Because maybe this is the way that the artist experiences his life or the world. But it doesn't really, you know, attract me. And I think it's very hard today, if you are a Christian artist, to be approved.
Now, I know you were here in the United States back in November. What did you think of the United States? What did you observe about our culture?
Well, I was there for the election, so there was a lot of tensions, a lot of, you know, debate going on, and it was fascinating to see this clash of people in a way. I love the American culture. I like always to visit the Americans because still you have much more variety. I come from a small country where people are more like-minded. You have it's much easier to have different opinions. But I think you're struggling with the same issues as we are everywhere in the Western world. And I think that this confrontation is becoming stronger and stronger between what is dark and what is darkness or light. Like I said before, I think the world is in this kind of spiritual warfare. It's not anymore about whether you are blue or red or you are left or right wing. It's about the truth or falsehood, about good and evil. It's a kind of, you know, epic battle, a tremendous battle, which is a spiritual battle for our time. And I think in America, during election time, it was really evident that this was what it was all about. I mean, the whole election campaign was only about what was true and what was false. It was not about the normal political issues, about economy and geopolitical problems. It was only about who's telling a lie and who's telling the truth. Who's a good person? Who's a bad person? Can we trust Hillary? Can we trust Trump? It was all those moral issues that were at stake. And I think that was fascinating to be following. Because to me, it was really very evident that it was not about politics. It was about spirituality in many ways, what was going on.
I agree
on.
Completely. And I want our listeners to know that they can be in touch with Ibn Thranholm, with an H, T-H, on her Facebook page. She has a Facebook page. She also has a Twitter account. She and I became friends recently on Facebook. I also have am following her Twitter feed. Ibn, is there anywhere else where people can regularly see what you're writing and what you're doing?
Well, I mean, I have written quite a lot of articles in English, and they can just Google my name.
Yes, I found them.
And then they will pop up. But I'm right now I'm working on trying to put up a video blog so that I will get like a real kind of my own, you could say, TV station,
yeah,
where I could come up with comments and things like that all the
time.
Well,
if you'll send me articles that you write in English, I'll post them myself on my and help get more visibility. And I can also post you at my online magazine, The Christian Review. So please feel free to send me things you write in English so I can help
you. Thank
you
so much. I would be very pleased to do that. Very pleased to do that.
I think your voice needs to be heard. And if I can ever be of any assistance in reaching out to Russia, because I think you're onto something there, very important, I certainly would do that. And I want to thank you for being a guest on Church and Culture today. And there's so much to talk about with you. I hope you'll come back sometime in the near future.
Anytime. I would be pleased to come back and talk to you.
Well, you're doing great work, and I think anyone who goes on the internet and looks up her videos, where she's interviewed and takes on the toughest questions that are being asked with great charm and great intelligence and absolutely no wavering, will be just as impressed as I have been. So thank you once again, Ibn Tranholm, for being a guest.
Thank you so much for having me.
Those of you listening, we'll be talking to another very interesting guest after this short message.
Hi, Deacon Tom here with a reminder that Ave Maria Radio has some terrific gift ideas for you. Books by our hosts and our guests, recordings on CD, and our new Wi-Fi radios, so you can listen to Catholic radio anywhere in the world, anytime you want, as long as you have a Wi-Fi connection. Just go to our website and click the word store on the right side of the page, just below the EWTN logo. It's an easy way to shop, and you can help Catholic radio at the same time. The website can be found at AveMariaRadio.net.
The following is a message brought to you by the Catholic Biblical School of Michigan.
I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord, plans for welfare and not for evil, to give you a future and a hope. Jeremiah wrote these words to the Jewish people who had been forced into exile. They were no longer in their own country, no longer in the Promised Land. We too may feel like those exiles, like strangers in a strange land. So what advice did Jeremiah offer? It was simple. Plant gardens, build houses, get married, and have kids. In other words, thrive. He also told them to pray for the country in which they lived, for its welfare would be their own. When we feel like exiles, we should do the same. Thrive by living in joy, pray for the welfare of our country, and trust in God's plan for our future and hope. To learn more about biblical advice for our daily lives, visit the Catholic Biblical School of Michigan on Facebook or cbsmich.org.
On our next program, Archbishop Alan Vigneron will be our first speaker as we complete our coverage of the Archdiocese of Detroit's Life is a Gift Conference.
This is always the vocation of the lay faithful, because in this democracy, it is the people who rule, and it belongs to us to shape the civil order. Specifically today, this then is the vocation of restoring the right to life. We are at a moment when this right not simply has to be defended, but it has to be vindicated.
This is Henry Root, your host for Putting on the Mind of Christ. Archbishop Alan Vigneron called the attendees to holiness and to witness to the gospel of life. And before we close the coverage, Dr. Michael Kinney takes a legal look at when life begins. Listen to Putting on the Mind of Christ this Sunday afternoon at 3, encoring Saturday afternoons at 6 on 990 WDEL, 1440 WMAX, and AveMariaRadio.net on the Internet.
Are you wondering how to homeschool your preschooler, or even whether it's a good idea? This week on Homeschool Heartbeat, HSLDA consultant Vicki Bentley shares 5 tips for teaching your preschooler at home. Now, here's your host, Mike Smith.
Our guest this week is Vicki Bentley, HSLDA's Toddlers to Tweens consultant. Vicki, welcome back to Homeschool Heartbeat.
Thanks, Mike. It's an honor to be here.
Vicki, perhaps more than ever, parents are starting to homeschool their children in preschool. Why is homeschooling preschoolers such a good idea, do you think?
Well, Mike, we know that this period from birth to age 5 is a really critical stage in brain development. Parents have been homeschooling from birth. You've already taught them to walk and talk. You're helping them learn to socialize with others of all ages. You're helping them to think logically and creatively. And now you can give them one-on-one attention, tailoring your efforts to their learning styles, to their interests, developmental stages, and you can build in time to deal with character issues as well. And this is all in the context of everyday living. So this isn't just preschool at home.